Okay, so for those, just wanted to follow up with one pischichu I forgot to mention last week, but it is an interesting idea. Those that have the Shulchan Aruch or last week's source sheet, so in Pischei Tshuva Zion, right, so we were discussing the idea of purchasing, and so in back in Siman Ayin Reish, or right, Reish, you know, 270, Pischei Tshuva number 7. So in the standard edition, it's about 7 lines from the bottom in the Pischei Tshuva. He says, "Ayin b'sefer Mishnas Chachamim b'kuntres Malus Hamidos Daf Kuflam Zay shekasadish li stapikim ira shekasav echad avur chavero sefer Torah b'li yediaso." All right, so somebody has a lot of money and they like somebody else a lot, and they say, "I'm going to buy him. I'm going to surprise him with a sefer Torah for his birthday." All right, so I'm going to do it on his behalf. So is he yotze the mitzvah? Or does that work? I mean, is he yotzei the mitzvah if I'm buying, if I'm paying for the sofer to write it? And truth is, b'li yediaso, without him knowing. Why is it important that it's without his knowing? So mi neima, do we say dekevan deschusu v'zachin la'adam and v'chulei v'shelo b'fanav yotzei dechavaso mitzvah zu? Right. So we have a concept called zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. Right, that if something is considered to be meritorious for somebody else, so I could do something on their behalf. So ein schus gadol mizeh, right? There shouldn't be any merit that's greater than this one, right? So I'm getting this mitzvah done on his behalf. So therefore, this should count as zachen la'adam shelo b'fanav. It's as if not just that I'm acquiring it, but that he's acquiring it. I'm acquiring it for him, and as if he's acquiring it. So certainly he should be yotze. Right, the havi ki'ilu kasu b'shlichus, because it's as if he wrote it b'shlichus. O neima, or maybe no, the lav zechus gamarhu lo, that maybe it's not a complete zechus for him. Why? Va'adaraba nichale le'inash le'mi'aved mitzvah begufe uvamamono. He says, how can you say it's a full zechus? We said that the ideal is for a person to write the sefer Torah himself. And if they're not able to write it themselves, so then they could pay somebody to write it, or they'll purchase it later, right? But those are considered lower levels of the mitzvah. So now I want to say, well, obviously this is a zechus for me to write, have it written on his behalf. Yeah, but he wanted to write it one day. He was practicing to write it. So maybe it's not considered a zechus for him. He says, v'chol heicha the lav zchus gamor hu lo amrin and zachin. If it's not a zchus gamor, we don't say zachin la adam shelo b'fanav. I'm not sure how true that is, but at least that's what the Pischei Tshuva says. Umemela de eno yotzei dechavasa mitzvah zukas. Maybe you shouldn't be yotzei kim de lo nasa shluchabas. Maybe it wasn't a full shlichus. It wasn't a full messengership that was done on his behalf. Veshuv kasa, he has to go back and write the ein kan makum suffik klal de lo mibay ladas. And there's no suffik that certainly according to the Ramah deem lakach sefer Torah eno yotzei klal. Certainly according to the Ramah would be a problem, because if you purchase a sefer Torah, you're not yotzei at all. Vaynushek beida haTorah sheyichtov baatzmo o al yedei shlucho. That maybe it should be written, you know, by him or by his shliach. Val kopadim yakriach b'kenias gevilin, that he should be involved in the process. Memel dim kosev acher bishvilo below daiso shle'eno yotzei klal, that he wouldn't be yotzei. And even according to Rashi, shekasev dahavi kachotev mitzvah, that you're still performing a mitzvah, that maybe it's not, he finishes up, it's not the full level of the mitzvah. So maybe one wouldn't be yotzei. That is the question. Who's he quoting this from? Mishnas Chachamim, right? That maybe it's not considered as a chus if I surprise somebody with a sefer Torah for their birthday or something like that. Maybe he's not yotzei the mitzvah. Now the only thing I was wondering, so that's an interesting question, because it's not considered a full chus. On the other hand, when's he going to have the opportunity to do it again? Maybe it is, right? But I didn't understand even the question in the first place, because the truth is. Is a person limited to buy to only one Sefer Torah in his life, right? Why can't a person write three Sefer Torah in his life? So maybe he has a chiv of only doing one, but he can write more than one. So this is a full schus, meaning he'll be yotzei the mitzvah here with somebody purchasing it on him. And if he really thinks that he's going to write one himself one day, then he'll write one himself one day. And he'll be yotzei that way. I'm not sure that just because you were yotzei, you fulfilled your mitzvah this way, that means you're no longer going to be yotzei the rest of your life. That's a little bit, right? You can be yotzei again with another Sefer Torah. I'm not quite sure what's driving that question. I thought it was an interesting thought on this idea, and pulling in the idea of Zachen La'adam Shelo B'fanav. Okay, so now we move on to Reish Ayin Aleph. So if we go to the Torah / Beis Yosef, so the Torah spells it out that in Kosin Sefer Torah Tfilin and Mezuzos al or behema v'chayav tmeya. This is Simon Reishan Aleph in the Torah. I think that's the first page of the source sheet. That a person shouldn't write a Sefer Torah Tfilin and Mezuzah on or behema v'chaya tmeya. If it's a skin of an animal or a chaya, that's not kosher. V'lo or a dog, not on a fish. Afilot or even a kosher fish. Elal or behema v'chaya v'of hatahorim. It has to be written on the skin of behemos, chayos, and ofs, and chickens, of birds that are tahor. Vafilu or nevelos v'treifos shalahan. Even if the skin is nevela or trefa, even if the animal turns out not to be kosher, that would still be considered sufficient. That would still be okay. And it doesn't sound like there's any hinder in that not being the case. I mean, using a nevela is perfectly okay. So by the way, that's how it works, right? Nowadays, if you've ever been to a shlachthaus, one opportunity was at a shlachthaus near Baltimore where they actually shecht animals. And the animal gets shechted, and within minutes it's moved along. You know, it shakes a little bit. It's on a conveyor belt. And the next thing that happens is they pull the skin off, and the skin then gets sent someplace else. It gets sent into a bucket of water, and it's mixed in with all the rest of the skins. So, I mean, here in this case, they weren't necessarily using that skin for cloth. This was probably, you know, the skins were probably going to be sent and turned into shoes or something, right? But only after they separate the skins do they actually check the insides of the animal to see if it's a trefa or not, right? That comes next, after the skin had already been separated. So to keep them together, right, it's not necessary. And by the way, it's not necessary at all. In fact, my father will remember, right, when we spent Shabbos in that conservative synagogue, right, the rabbi told us there that he is a complete vegetarian, and therefore the thought of davening with animal hides wrapped around his arm he didn't appreciate. He didn't like that. What?
It was very repulsive.
Right, it was repulsive for him. Except for when this Lubavitch kid asked him to put on tefillin, he agreed because the Lubavitch kid was trying so hard, which was a little mind-blowing. But anyways, so there is somebody out there who has proposed the idea of vegetarian tefillin. Why? What is vegetarian tefillin? So vegetarian tefillin is not what it sounds like, that it's just made of, you know, synthetic. This person's thought is there should be a farm set aside for animals that die naturally, and only naturally dying animals should be used for tefillin, right? That way, it's you're not killing an animal for the purpose of tefillin. It's dead anyways, and therefore you're raising the level of the skins. Now, practically, I don't think that's. I mean, I have a feeling many more animals that would be used for this die by the knife rather than naturally. So practically, how that could be done. But anyways, he is right. Technically, he is right that a nevela and a trefa animal would be permissible. Where does this come from? So the truth is, it's a Gemara that the Beis Yosef quotes from Meseches. Where is it? It's not in Megillah, rather it is in. Can we? In Shabbos, Daf Kuf Ches Amud Aleph, right? In Shmona Shratzim, in Shabbos, where all this is laid out. Now, interestingly enough, the Gemara there is actually only talking about tefillin. It only mentions that this is all in the context of tefillin. That these are the requirements of tefillin. How do we know to extend it to anything else? So if we look in the Beis Yosef on the second or the third wide line. He says, "Va'afal pisha kol elahad varm l'inyan tefillin." Right? He quotes the Gemara where he figures this out. The issue with fish, by the way, is a question in the Gemara. That's in that section above, whether you could use fish skin or not. And he says that unless Eliyahu HaNavi comes and tells us that fish aren't considered smelly, so we're not going to use it. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, you can't use it because Eliyahu HaNavi is not around to decipher whether the fish skins are considered smelly or not. But he does say, "Va'afal pisha kol elahad varm l'inyan tefillin." Now, this whole discussion was only with regards to tefillin, him shenuyim beperek ches shmona shratzim chadiminayu nakad v'huadin le'enach. That it should be for one of them, and the other things would be for other ones as well. I mean, just as even though the halacha there is a cipher by tefillin, it would be by other stam objects as well. Da'atanan, plus we have a mishnah meseches Megillah in bein sfarim letefillin umezuzos elish hasfarim nichtvim b'chol lashon. Right, that there's no difference between sfarim, tefillin, and mezuzos, except for that sfarim can in theory be written in any language. And we'll maybe see down the line what exactly that means, but the Gemara there tells say there's no distinction, but other than that, there's no distinction between Sifrei Torah, Megillas, and Mezuzahs and Tefillin. So therefore, that halacha is then going to be applicable to the other halachos as well.
Usually, the Rambam distinguishes between types of cloth you can use for the different types of things.
Okay. Yes. No. So that right. That's true. That's actually later on in this siman that they, the distinctions of which side of the klaf you use, not the Rambam, that's the Gemara itself, gets into that discussion. I don't think we're not getting there tonight. If you all want to do epidermal studies of gassos and prepare for next week, that might be appropriate to do so. But anyway, so that's the halacha in terms of what it comes from. I guess while we're here, we'll do the second half as well. So the Shulchan Aruch, so the Torah continues on and says, "V'tzarech sheyehu ha'oros muvadim l'shem sefer Torah." That the oros need to be mu'uvadim. So what does that mean? What's the best translation of that? Prepared, I don't know. Softened, soaked, the way that they are prepared, the way that you prepare leather. So that has the ibud process has to be l'shem sefer Torah. I don't think that's called, is it called tanning? Is that what's called
tanning?
Even the tanning is not just leaving it out in the sun. The whole process is called tanning? Okay, so then it's the tanning process. So the tanning process, what? Right. So then he says that the tanning process, that needs to be l'shem sefer Torah. Aval tikun ha-klaf v'sirtuto ein tzarech shehei l'shma. But setting up the klaf and the sirtuto, meaning engraving of the lines, that does not need to be l'shma. Now, where is he getting that from? So if you go back into the Beis Yosef, that's a Gemara in Meseches Gittin. Perakanitskin, Gabi Ahuda Asal Kami de Rabbi Abba. Someone came in front of Rabbi Abba. I looked up the text itself. It actually is Rabbi Abahu. I'm not sure if that makes a difference. But Amrle Sefer Torah Shekasafti Leploni Gvilin Shabo Lo Ividitam Lishma. That the a sofer came along and said, you know, I wrote the Sefer Torah for Shmerel, and I realized that I didn't tan the leather Lishma. Right, the cloth wasn't prepared Lishma. So Amar Lei, so he responded, or Yabo responded by saying, "Mitoch shata neman lahafsid tzcharecha neman ata lifsol sefer Torah." Because you're believed with regards to losing your money on it, right? You're believed to passel that sefer Torah. Now, right, we could say, well, why should he be believed? I mean, you know, but he's because he's also then going to lose money on it. I mean, the guy's going to come back and say, hey, you know, you sold me a Sefer Torah, and now it's puzzle because the Ibud wasn't Lishma, right? And he has to admit to it. So the fact that he's believed with regards to him having to lose his money, he therefore is believed to say that the Sefer Torah is puzzle as well. That sounds like over there that Rava doesn't say Ivud Lishma according to Rashi, but we don't assume that way. We assume that it has to be Ma'aved Lishma. Now, there's a little note there that sends you to the Darkei Moshe. This is going to be important, where the Darkei Moshe quotes Kasav Beis Yosef Ba'orachaim Simen Lamed Beis. Right, so you have to remember a lot of Hilchos Sefer Torah is going to be matching up with something that appears in Orachaim. Because in Orachaim is where all of Hilchos Tefillin are, and your day is where all Hilchos Sefer Torah and Hilchos Mezuzah are. So there's some crossing over there. So the Beis Yosef over there quotes that Imeuvad L'Shem Mezuzah Pasul the Tefillin. That if the Ibud was Lishma for the purpose of Mezuzah, you're not going to be able to use it for tefillin, because mezuzah is considered to be on a lower level than tefillin. Mashma de gushas tefillin, right? Chamur mi mezuzah. Venira de huadin, the same thing would be here. Im uved le tefillin, pasul a sefer Torah, de gushas sefer Torah, chamur mi tefillin. That if you tanned the leather thinking that it was going to be used for tefillin, it can't then be changed in order to be used for a sefer Torah. Right? So that's what the Darkei Moshe here says. Now one more idea. Yeah.
So it's a kosher animal, a cow, or what have you, but does it have to be, can you take it like from a trade, slaughter a skin from an animal that was not shefted properly?
Yeah, night art. Yeah. That's a novella, yeah.
Okay.
That's a novella, potentially.
I was just checking.
Yeah. I mean, I saw.
How does that work? Did they just go ahead and just collect a whole bunch of skin from?
So practically, my understanding is that most of the skins are coming from South America, because that's where the large slaughterhouses are. Now, the truth is, why should it matter? You should be able to get it from, you know, wherever McDonald's gets their meat from, you should be able to get the skins from. But Lemaisa, that's they get them, you know, from where the kosher the large kosher shechitas take place. And by the way, I would add as well that nowadays over 99% of klafs come from shlils, come from animals that were not born. That animals are found, enough animals are found inside, you know, enough cows are shechted when they're pregnant, that those that the skins from the inside is actually what's used, at least for the klaf. I'm not sure if, for the batim and what's it called and the ritzuos, that maybe not the, it's probably perhaps is not the case, but the klafs are 99% from shlils. There's an Alpi Kabbalah. There's an idea that it's considered chashuv that the animal never saw the skin never saw olam hazeh. So that's considered higher on that level. But beyond that, it's also much softer and much easier to use, which is why you'll find that modern day Sifrei Torah are much lighter and brighter than the Sefer Torahs that you'll find in, I don't know, like Beth HaMedrash, for instance, right? Where the Sefer Torah are all several decades old. Many of them come from Russia, etc., before this came. I mean, it used to be, if you needed klaf, you were a sofer in some shtetl someplace, so you went to Laser Wolf down the block, and you said, hey, Laser, when you buy that milk cow off of Tevye, you know, I reserve the skins that you're going to take off from it, right? So that's the way it used to work. Nowadays, where everything is mass-produced, so there is apparently enough of these shlils. So I actually looked into this when I first found out this. I was like, really? How many animals get shlechted with a cow inside? So apparently 40% of cows that get of female cows that get shechted have a shlil inside. So that apparently is enough to provide for the klaf market in the world.
Question.
Yeah.
You may have how many shlils does it take to make a Torah?
Yeah, so I don't know how many shlils. I forget the question amount of ureos and it's per shlil also. I don't know that I would have to ask a little bit more. What? It also depends on the size. Correct. Correct. When I buy ritzuos, so I tell my tell Moshe, I need a roll of ritzuos. So sometimes it's someplace between 90 and 115 meters. Usually it's sold by the meter, right? So first of all, how do you get a 90 meter long ritzua, right? It's all one thing, right? So
cows.
Right, so how do you get a 90-foot long cow to get a ritzua off of it? So the answer is that it's laid out and then it's cut in a circle, right? That's how they make it, okay? Which is why sometimes you'll see a ritzua is like bent, like you'll see it's like twisted sort of. So that's because it's from the inner part of the circle and they couldn't straighten it out. I might have this.
But how big is a shlil, though?
No.
It's big enough to make a cloth.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're, yeah, they could, a couple, Moshe sent me his material to do presentations a year or two ago and had a skin in it. I mean, it's formed. I mean, they have hair on it and stuff, these shlils. But yeah, apparently it is large enough at least for, and it's stretched. It's not just the animal, right? But in the process, you know, it's stretched out as well. And that's apparently enough for the klaf. So ritzuos are made in circles. So they're going to, so what's the difference between 90 and like, why is it different measurements? The answer is because sometimes the skin is, you know, big, sometimes it's larger and so, you know, different sizes. So that's going to produce different length, ritzuos rolls. Okay. Anyways, so back over here. So that's number one. So it needs to be lishma. And then you have this Darkei Moshe adding in that it seems to be lishma. He's only going in one direction. He says if it's lishma for a mezuzah, if it was for a mezuzah, it can't be used for tefillin. If it was for a tefillin, it can't get used for a sefer Torah. But he doesn't say the opposite, right? He doesn't say if it was for a sefer Torah, it can't be used for tefillin, right? The other direction he doesn't go in. Okay. The next question, it's a major question, is, okay, and so how lishma, what's needed in lishma? right? So the old process of doing ibud took like over a week, right? Apparently, they dunked it in this liquid, soaked it in this liquid for a couple days, and they took it out and they put it back in, and it was like a 7 or 8 day process. So so how much of that does a Jew need to be involved in? So I guess the tour here continues on. It says, V'arav baruch nistapik im tzarech sheyotzi b'sfasav. Oh, this is a different issue, sorry. B'sfasav shema avdu lishma, o im sagi b'machshava shema chashiv kach b'libo. He says, first of all, he's unclear whether you actually have to say it out loud or it's enough to think it. Okay, once you're there, it's not that big of a deal. V'chazav ni'ar yarash, hilkach tov sheyotzi b'sfasav yom edchila ibud kesheshimusha l'to chasid. Oros elu ani mavid l'kedusha sefer Torah v'sulo tzarech. Therefore, the Rosh said, before you dunk it in, right, you should say, this is being tanned for the purpose of a sefer Torah. The Rambam adds in, im hagoy ma'avdo pasul, afilu omer lo Yisrael avad uros el l'shem sefer Torah. Right? Then the Rambam says that if the guy puts it in, right? So that's no good. That doesn't work. If he does the ibud, even if a Jew is standing right there. Right? Shari. That if Rav Baruch, however, Rav Baruch, I believe, is one of the Bali Tosos, see, he said that no, that the Jew doesn't have to put it in himself. As long as he sees it take place, that would be permissible, and that's what the Baal Itzer says, that the guy could do it as long as the Jew is standing on his over his shoulder. V'cheinu maskanas Adoni Aviyah Rush. If you look in the Beis Yosef on page Reish Vav, right, so there the Rush says V'hilchu Sefer Torah Kasav Rush Nagu Ha'am Karav Baruch Ke'ein Avdonim Yisraelim Mitzuyin B'chol Hamakaymus. Right, that apparently everybody relied on Rabbeinu Baruch because apparently. Being a leather tanner was not such a Jewish profession. They couldn't find enough Jewish leather tanners around, so therefore he had to rely on Rabbeinu Baruch and tell the non-Jewish tanner to do that. This is for the purpose of the Sefer Torah, and make sure he knew that as he was putting in, and that would be sufficient. Now the Beis Yosef asking, not the Rush himself. If you look on the top of the next page on Reish Zion, he says Vani Tema. He says, I was wondering, Lama Kasev Shenagel Karabinu Baruch Lefish Ein Avdanim Yisrael Lemitzuyin. He says, why, like, what's so hard about this, right? What does it mean that they had to rely on Rabbeinu Baruch because there weren't Jewish tanners around? V'chi'ein avdanim Yisrael mitzuyin, right? My hubby, right? What does it matter that there weren't any Jewish professional tanners? Hakevish ain't tzarech lishma el b'chila se'ibud yunisin Yisrael b'toch hasid, right? All you need is the guy in the beginning when he's dunking it into the brew to just say this is lishma. So why can't the Jew just dunk it in? Like, what's the big deal? Right? So what if he's not the professional tanner? Right? All you need is him to put it in, right? It's like at the cemeteries. So you wanna have a Jew do as much as he can, but you have the gravedigger guys around, like, you know, that you can't do too much. So, like, you know, to lower the casket, all it takes is flicking the switch, right? You just flick the switch. So usually they're okay with you flicking the switch. Like, beyond that, like, hands off. But they let you flick the switch, so too here, right? Let them dunk the thing in. What's the big deal? So, v'achad yavdum agoy v'hav muvdan l'shma gam l'das ha-rambam. V'shema, so he answers in, lo hayu agoy manichim li'yisrael li'tina arvus l'to chasid. Apparently the guy wouldn't let you. There were union rules. I don't know. Union restrictions that a Jew couldn't go by, past the line, or COVID restrictions, right? There was some reason why Jews could, that they wouldn't let the Jew nearby. So therefore that was the reason they had to rely on Rabbeinu Baruch. But in a Hachinami, if a Jew could be somewhat involved and be able to put it in, so that would be preferable. That way you would be Yotze, according to the Shita Sarambam.
I mean, Middle Ages.
Yeah, he's in the Beis Yosef, so he's, yeah, it's the 12, 1300s, yeah.
So there may have been, probably were guilds.
Could be.
Guild restrictions.
Right, okay.
But it's in Europe, I mean, the Rambam would, so Sfardim would agree with that? I mean, how does...
Well, this is all in the Beis Yosef, so the Beis Yosef knows it exists. The Rush said that it's okay, the Rambam was against it, I'll see what he paskins in a second here. Okay, so if you go now, if you turn now to the Shulchan Aruch, so in Reish Ayin Aleph, Sif Aleph here. So it says, "Ein kostun sefer Torah al or behema chaya ba'of hatameim," right? That you can't write. So back to the first part of what we discussed: not writing a sefer Torah on animals that aren't kosher and not on fish, even if they are tahor. Aval kostun al or behema chaya ba'of hatahor mafilu or neveilus treifus shalhem. But it has to be meat or fowl of a that are kosher, even if it's a nevela or a treifa, that would be okay. So if you take a look at Pisrei Tshuva Gimel, so Pisrei Tshuva has an issue which, this was the case a little bit more with the older Sifrei Torah. If you look at older, I think even the older ones in our shul, there's like some kind of covering. There's like a lime, some kind of covering that they have to the cloth. It's not like straight cloth. There's like some kind of covering on it. So the Pisrei Tshuva actually addresses that here. He says, "I am b'tshuvas aleph aleph zayin." Not sure that it was. Panim meiros chelik gimel haklaf she'achar ibud hasid moshchin oso b'tzeva lavan. After they would soak it in this lime mixture, they would put it. There would be this white coating that they would put on top of it. And by putting on this white covering, they were able to make it so that it was smoother and easier to write on. And therefore it was very good. So some of the sofrim complained about this, right? So this is going to be a theme, right? A theme throughout Hilchos, anything in Hilchos Stam, right? And there's some sofrim that weren't happy about it, right? This is stuff that evolved. A lot of the makings of Stam products have evolved over the years. So anytime that there's an evolution of things like this, just like in Hilchos Mila, so there's always going to be a big fight about it, right? So too here, right? So some of the sofrim were not happy with this, right? Usher lichtov al klaf. They said it's usher to write on this. Why? But you're not writing on the cloth, you're writing on the covering of the cloth, right? You're writing on something on top of it. And that's actually separating between the cloth and the ksav. And he answered, "Kina sofrim huze." So that's a little bit of a play on words, right? Kina sofrim is used in the Gemara, we had this in Hilchos Tam Torah, the jealousy amongst scholars, right? That you want to increase. Sometimes it helps to have more rabbanim because that will help, right? So he's doing a bit of a play on words. That's just jealousy of the sofrim, right? V'adarabba, mitzvah min amuvchar lichtov al klaf. It's better to write on that. Mishum zek keli v'anveu. It looks a lot nicer. V'haytzeva lo have hefsek dechol l'neusan eino chotzeitz. And that tzeva is not considered a separation. Dechol l'neusan eino chotzeitz. Now that's a controversial statement over there. That anything that is for the beauty of the object is not considered a chatzitza. Right? So this comes up, for example, I think the Gemara itself raises this question of, what about if you had a gold lulav holder, right? That it would actually hold while you're benching lulav, right? Would that be okay? Or that's l'neusan, that's to make it beautiful. Or that's going to be considered a hefsik. And beyond that, you have an additional question in all of Stam, and that is, what is considered beautiful, right? Who defines that this is nicer than something else, right? So it comes up in the book Inside Stam, he discusses a Megillah that has artwork on the side, right? Is that considered good or is it not good? So he writes, it's not good. He says, beauty of the Megillah, so this is a minug, and many people have it, and many people consider it nicer. But he says, no, a beauty of a Stam product should be determined by the halachos of a Stam product, right? The beauty is not that you're using fancy colors and fancy paints. The beauty is that every aleph is written perfectly, and every beis is written perfectly, and every gimel is written perfectly, and all with perfect spaces in between, right? So that's a question here. But that, right, this already is touching on that question. And he says, v'ayin b'sefer b'nei Yonah. No relation that I know of. Shaharich bazeh inyan, that he deals with this at length. V'haladim betzeva kol kach daka, and he says it depends how thick the lime is or this coating is. Right? Shadiyu mavir tachas hatzeva umismatzei b'tocha klaf efshar lahachshir. That if it's thin enough that when you write on it, the ink goes beneath it and actually touches the cloth, it's okay. Avayimish mamish shebeim tika chatzeva yedei grar mavir tzura sa'os, right? But if it's so thick that if you scrape it off, you're going to remove all the letters as well, right? B'li she'tigre gufa klaf, and not even touch the klaf, right? Imkein ein suris kol os al klaf. That means that the letters are not actually on the klaf. And yeshil pasul, and there are those that would pasul it. U'mikol she'kein lefi anira ein miskayim zman meruba ki sofo she'atseva misparer mi'al ha'klaf k'shetis yashen v'imkein gorim mechika sashem. He says, anyways, I don't think it's going to last very long, but at the end of the day, the color will come off from the klaf. This coating that you're putting on is going to come off anyways, and therefore I don't think it's a good idea anyways, right? So that's also something you'll hear from Sofrim when someone comes up with an idea, it's not going to work, as of the following. All right, so anyways, there was this coating, but it has to be thin enough such that you would still reach the klaf. Okay, so
that... I think one of the Sofrim told me that one of the Torahs that we have has a covering, and he said it makes it much heavier.
Yeah, right. No, certainly it does. Sometimes there is a way of sort of refurbishing Sifrei Torah, which those in the business say don't even bother trying to do, but that they claim that there's a spray that you could spray on that will keep the letters intact. But that's different. Anyways, that's a spray that goes on top. I don't know if it would make it heavier. But yes, I think so. Certainly, I think at least one of our Sifrei Torahs has some kind of covering that's on top. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so next. All right, so now we get into this Lashma issue, which is actually a pretty big issue. So the Shulchan Aruch then says, V'tzarech she'yu ha'oros mu'uvadim al yidei Yisrael, that the oros should be, mu'ubad, should be tanned by a Jew, l'shem sefer Torah, she'omer b'tchilas ha'ibud k'shem, masim osom l'soch hasid, oros elu anim avi l'shem sefer Torah. Right, that you should say, before they get dunked into the thing, that these oros are for the purpose of a Sefer Torah. Continues on the Ramah, v'ma'avdir ovi kochav, v'yisayeh ha'yisrael ma'at, that if a non-Jew does it, so a Jew should help a little bit. B'tchilas kishenosno l'sid v'yomer shehu osu l'shem kedusha Sefer Torah. That and when he gives it over, such that he should say, the non-Jew should say, that it's for the purpose of a Sefer Torah. Now, the non-Jew, even the non-Jew would say it. Now, that's if he can't help. Now, I presume that Rabbeinu Baruch would say, sure, if you could help, that's great. But apparently, the tanning unions would not permit it. So therefore, you would ask him to say it, that they would be okay with. And then he adds in, V'yismano san oro shelo yachlifo v'kochavim v'lo chayshinan achar kach shem hachlifo v'kochavim v'zayv simanim acharav. Right? You should put in simanim if you're doing it. So you're going to the tannery where he's tanning all sorts of stuff. So whatever you put in should have a simon on it, such that you're able to make sure that it's yours and that the simon should be complicated enough that it won't be able to be replicated by the v'kochavim. Right? So these are things that we deal with in the kashrus world all the time. Okay, so what does this lishma mean that it needs to be? So the shame, right, it has to be lishem sefer Torah. So if we take a look, if you take a look at Pischei Tshuva Tes, right, that when he puts it in, he's saying ani mavir lishem sefer Torah. So he says what? Ma'aved l'shem sefer Torah. So I am at Shuvas Rabbeinu Akiva Eger Simon Beis. This is all the way in the front of Shuvas Rabbeinu Akiva Eger. Not a very long Shuva. Pretty much, the Pesach Shuva did a pretty good job getting it all in here. Shekasav Sheshal LaHasofrim Eich Noagim Likach B'Ksivas Gittin Me'aklofim HaMu'uvadim. That he asked the Sofrim, says, hey, by the way, I see you're writing the Gittin on Klaf. Now, by the way, I believe our minhag today is to write Gittin on paper, specifically on paper. I think. I'm pretty sure. I was only present at a few Gittin, I think two. I believe the minhag is to write it on paper for some reason. But he does add in sirtut, meaning he put in those lines. They do add those lines into it. But apparently Rabbi Akiva Eger asked around. He says, by the way, he saw that they were using, they would take cloth that would otherwise be used for Sifrei Torah, and they used it for Gittin. So he said, how could that be? Right? The Have Horada Mikdusha L'chol. You are diminishing the Kedusha and making it Chol, making it for non-Kadush purpose. Right? It's hard for us to think about it that way, right? Is a get a mitzvah object, or is it not? So, like, what do you mean? It's a mitzvah. I mean, that's, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? But he says, no, it's a mundane object that you're using it for. V'zeu iser Afilu b'hazmana debeguf hakdusha hazmana milsehi. He says, and this is usher, right? Even with the issue of hazmana, even if it's only set aside for that. Why? We normally assume a concept called hazmana lav milsehi. Are we paskin that something set aside for a mitzvah does not attain a mitzvah status until it's actually used that way? But he says that if it was ma'abid lishma, that's enough. That's more than hazmana. That's really set aside. It actually has set kedusha right now. So that's the first thing Rabbi Akiva Eiger was upset about. And then he says, hein lichtuv tefillin, yesh, and what about with regards to writing tefillin? Yesh, but to use it for tefillin, he says that would be okay. Right? Aval lichtuv get vaday aser. Right? So he says to use it for tefillin, that would be okay, which means you're diminishing it in terms of the kedusha. Right? That's okay. But to use it for a get, that would be a problem. That's aser. V'yishivulo, shebisha'ash manichin or, so they answered him, I mean, this is what he asked, he went over to the sofer, right, to whoever does this, and says, by the way, what do you do about this, how do you get this cloth? He said, I understand if you use Torah cloth for tefillin, right, I think that could be okay, but to use Torah cloth for a get, that should be a problem. So he responds, "Veishivu lo shebishash manichna orus besid omrim shei meuvad l'shem sefer Torah o tefillin o mezuzos v'gitin." He says because when they put it in, he doesn't just put it in and says l'shem sefer Torah. He says this hereby should be meuvad for a sefer Torah or for tefillin or for mezuzos or for gitin. Right, all inclusive ibud process here. Right, kefi mashe yivcheru acharikin, according to what is then chosen afterwards. The kasav shazel lo nachon klal. So then he writes, meaning Rabbi Akiva Eiger then continues on and says, but even that's not correct. That's not correct either, right? Why? The imkain nitzarich lomar dezesh kosiv alav gittin hu chol, right? Because if you're saying that some of this has a possibility of being used for a mundane purpose, i.e. the get, right? So that's a mundane purpose. V'zeu shekosiv alav sefer Torah huver hadavar shenevad l'shem sefer Torah. He says, and if that's the case, when the kedush, if there's a chance that it won't be used for a davar kadosh, so then when it does get used for a davar kadosh, that's when it's getting kedusha, as opposed to when the ibud is taking place. He says that's no good. Vare anan kaimel and bedoraisa ein breira. We assume ein breira on a level of doraisa, right? Ein breira is a sugi that shows up every 10-15 dafim in some context or another about what does a later thing determine what happened earlier, right? That's the question of whether ein breira. So he says it doesn't. So just because it's used for a sefer Torah later doesn't mean you can predetermine it earlier. That's what it is for. Vahora lehemser rikiveger therefore told them lasos kach to do this. She yavdu hakol l'shem sefer Torah. He says that you're putting it in for l'shem sefer Torah, and you make a t'nai that unless it's not used for a sefer Torah, right? As opposed to putting it in, saying this is going to be either for a sefer Torah, a mezuzah, a tefillin, or a get, right? You say this is for a sefer Torah, but we reserve the right to change it back. That would work. Don't know what that is. Anyone? I don't know. Sof Simon Samachay, Vayin Sham Od, who there talks about this more. Okay, so that's an important Rabbi Akiva Eiger trying to figure out this issue with Ibud. So the conclusion of Rabbi Akiva Eiger seems to be, right, that you should put it in saying this is L'shem Kedusha, on condition that it actually gets used that way. If it gets used for something else, so then we're hereby not making it Kadosh. That's what Rabbi Akiva Eiger's suggestion is. So if you go on to the... Because then the ibud is not, because then the when you put it in, there's only a, for instance, a 90% chance it'll get used for Kedusha. So if there's only a 90% chance it's going to be used for Kedusha, that doesn't work. As opposed to Rabbi Akiva Eiger's suggestion is, no, there's a 100% chance it's going to be used for Kedusha, unless it's not, right? On condition, but we could have that right to remove that condition later on. That's his suggestion. Meaning, as opposed to saying beforehand that 10% of this is not going to be in, we're saying it's all going to be in, but we reserve the right to take some out. Right? It's a little different there. So as we said, this all gets transposed in Hilchos Tefillin as well. So in the last page of the source sheet here, I put in from the Mishnah Brewer here. So in Siman Lamed Beis is one of the longer simanim here. It's I think 50 something sifim. That's all the halachos of the actual making of the of tefillin, right? Not when you wear it. Right? Actual lemaisa, how you make tefillin is found Siman Lamed Beis. It's Nun Beis Sifim. So towards the beginning here, he says in Ches, it's Tzorech HaKlaf Lius Me'ubad Be'afatzim O Besid, right, that it the klaf is to be tanned in these materials, V'tzorech She'i Me'ubad Lishmo, and needs to have be tanned Lishma, right, Tov L'Hotzi B'Sfasa B'Tchil L'Se'ibut Shehu Me'abdu L'Shem Tefillin O L'Shem Sefer Torah. So here that the Shulchan Aruch adds that you should say in the beginning, preferably balpeh, that this ibud, that this this tanning that I'm doing is for the purpose of tefillin, or for the purpose of sefer Torah. But if it was, but if you tanned it for the purpose of mezuzah, that would be no good. So here the Shulchan Aruch himself codifies that you could in theory go down in levels. I mean, as long as you got the highest level. Right, there's lowest common denominator and there's the other one, highest, like in fifth grade math, right? You have to there's two concepts. There's lowest common denominator and there's like a highest something, right? So you have to get the highest possible level here, the Shem Sefer Torah, but the but that would then be inclusive of the Shem Tefillin. So if you take a look at the Mishnah Brewer here in Chav Vav, he says you could do it l'shem sefer Torah, d'kedusha sachamura mitfila, because that's a higher level. Uveklal matim mana. V'afal pike mutul l'shan uveklal masayim mana. I'm not sure what that is. The 200 mana. I'm not sure what he's referring to there. V'afal pike, and even so, mutul l'shanos l'tfilin mezuzos. You'd still be permitted to change it back to tfilin mezuzos. Af d'kedusha sam kali men, even though it's a lower level of kedusha. Aval adavar chol aser l'shnosu levad aser l'shnosu. But to change it to something chol a get, right? That for sure would not be allowed. Levad im hisna beferish betchilas ibudim shehim mutur l'shnosu. Right? Unless you said it explicitly, right? This is Rabbi Akiva Eger. Unless you said it explicitly that I have the right to change it later on, afla davar chol az mutu l'shanos, then it would be permitted to change. V'anachashi en higu kein ha-sofrim l'chadchila be'ez ha-masimin ha-oros l'toch ha-sid. It's preferable that the sofrim do this when they put it in the sid. Shiyomru, that he says, ani nosin oros elu toch ha-sid l'shem k'dusha sefer Torah. I'm putting it in for the person sefer Torah. V'ani masne l'cha she'erza she'ocha l'shnosu l'chol davar. That if but I put on a tnai that if I want to, I could use it for something else, as opposed to the sofer that say it in l'shem sefer Torah or l'tfilin o mezuzos o shar divrei rishus. Daz mistapkim ha'achronim imahani. If that would actually work, I'm a beir halacha where he quotes Rabbi Akiva Eger at length. Okay, so that is this sugya. So that is, so it sounds so far right that you how strict do we need to be? Right. So again, what did we say earlier? So in the back in Anatevka, when the sofer needed some klaf, he would go down to Laser Wolf and he would say, "Hey, Laser, I need some klaf. I need some skins." Laser would give him some skins, and then he would take it to the tanner, who's probably one of those Russian guys who, you know, did the kamatsachka in the middle, you know, danced in the middle, right? And he'd say, "Hey, I need you to do this." He said, "Why? What are you making?" He says, "Oh, he would know what he's making. Oh, I have an order for a Sefer Torah. I have an order for a mezuzah. I have an order for tefillin." He'd be able to say what it is. He says, "But nowadays, the klaf is made in South America someplace, right? So they have no idea what this klaf is going to be used for, right? So therefore, they use these tenayim. They say that this is going to be used for Sefer Torah, mezuzah, or tefillin, right? They're not going to be specific as to how it counts." Now, is that seems to be what the Mishnah Brewer says. Now, if you take a look at the first drive that I put on here, right, the first of the Google drives, so it's a tshuva from Rav Shternbach. So, in Rav Shternbach, this is tshuvas van Hugo's Chelek Aleph, Simon Tufrei Shlamed Vav, right, number 636. He is pretty prolific. Baruch Hashem, he's still alive. What? Yes, and this is just volume 1. I think Tshuvas and Nehugos go up to volume 6 already, at least. Right? So if you take a look, Simon Taf Reish Lamed Vav, the question is, Be'ibud Oros HaSefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzos Imoel Tanai HaNahug. Does the Tanai that everybody uses work? Right? And you see, here, right off the bat, he quotes the Mishnah Brura, Simon Lamed Beis. So then skip to the next page, where he says, "Umatzasi b'sefer Baruch she'amar b'tikun tefillin shemevi lomer benuchzach zeh l'shem kedusha sefer Torah tefillin mezuz v'kemiyin." He says, but I don't think it's okay to put a tanai on that it could be used for a davar chol. Right? That's not going to be enough. Right? If this is not sufficient, that it can't be put on such a tanai. And I'm a shafachus Rabbi Kiva, v'od achronim nimster shematirin kai gavna, that they permitted it, and Ona Yontif was questioning this. Alkain, therefore, the next paragraph, Alkain etzli, bezuz Hashem, ani makbod, I'm very makbid. B'sefer Torah tefillin mezuz, lomar ach v'rak l'shem hakadusha hapratit, ubeli shum t'nai l'shanos. That we only to say exactly what it's going to be used. Umatzasi b'shem agon Rav Chaim from Rav Salavechik shena gamkein ledaktik lo la'avid l'shem sefer Torah lahasos, and not to put any tanayim ela kol kedusha l'shma pratis, to say this cloth is going to be used for sefer Torah, this cloth is going to be used for tefillin, this cloth is going to be used for mezuzah, this cloth is going to be used for megillah, right, and not to change it up. So this is one of those chumras that are out there in the sefer right, the inside Stam sefer. On page 90-something. Just pull it up here. Right? Question number 14. Another hiddur mentioned to me was klaf b'li tanai. What is that? So he talks about this ibu l'shma process that we've been talking about. He says, however, since a minority opinion considers this solution ineffective, some are careful to purchase only klaf processed b'li tanai without this condition and produce especially for the stam item they wish to have it written for. So this is one of these chumras, right? You want to know why a pair of tefillin might cost $600, another pair of tefillin might cost $2,000, right? This is one of the conditions that a person may impose. They might say, no, I want the chumra of a klaf b'li tanai. I see here in a footnote here, he quotes from the Petek HaMefursam of Rav HaTzadik, Rav Nisanel Tifilinsky. Who's Rav Nisanel Tifilinsky? So those that have, if you can ask Rabbi Avram Levine about this. He was the famous old sofer from Yerushalayim. He passed away, I think, in 1918. But he is known, he actually codified and actually was very creative. And a lot of the modern practices of tefillin actually come from him. There's stories about him. I actually Googled today. If you want a pair of tefillin from Rav Nisanel Tifilinsky, they're available at auction for between $30,000 and $40,000 a pop. Okay? But they are available, and they are kosher, right? So you could... You might need new ritzuos, yes. But other than that, they are a kosher pair of Rav Nisanel Tefillin. That's what it runs you, apparently. Although they're still around. I mean, people still have them. I don't know if Rabbi Levine has one. I believe his grandfather had one. I believe in his family there is a pair of these Tefillin. Rav Yashav may have had. Rav Yashav might have gotten a pair from him at his bar mitzvah, for all I can tell. That's around. So anyways, in some kind of receipt that they have from him, he wrote a pair of tefillin for Rav Shmuel Salant, and he says, I made that tanai when I made his tefillin, the tefillin for Rav Shmuel Salant, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim at that time, that these are specifically tefillin klafim that I'm making. However, I sent a note today, I called my one of my suppliers, I asked him, is klaf b'li tanai available on the market? He's like, look, everything's on the market someplace. He's like, but I've never sold a pair of Al Tanai, a B'li Tanai tefillin, or anything. I never got an order like that. Moshe also told me, I sent him a text. He also told me he didn't have any requests for this. But everything's out there for a price if you're out to get it. So that is the sugya and the chumra of klaf b'li tanai. We did not get to tonight the issue of klaf avodas yad, which is also sort of in the sif, but maybe we'll cover that with some of the sifim that we have next week, which is a bigger machlokas, right? And that actually exists today. The idea of klaf, that was most of the Iba process switched to being machine done in the 1900s, and then it started shifting back to being done avodas yad. So that's a chumrah that's much more on the market today. That I want avodas yad klafim. So is that necessary? How necessary is that? So I guess you'll probably get to that, Mirza Hashem, next week.
What's the last name of that Rav, the son of what?
Tefilinsky. At least that's what he was known. Sofer also. He's known by both. I found a Wikipedia article on him in Hebrew. There's only a Hebrew Wikipedia article on him, not an English one. But if you check it out, there it's from Nisanel Hasofer Tefilinsky. So
the ones that we're all getting nowadays that are from South America, as you say, there's no stipulation at all. They
probably do with what the Mishnah Berurah says, that they say this could be used for any stam on condition that it gets used for kedusha, if it doesn't even, you know, and potentially not even used for kedusha. They're going to follow the Mishnah Berurah. Actually, I should add, Moshe Gans told me that in Badatz he heard that they're machmir for this. That the Beis Din said, you know, Badatz in Yerushalayim is machmir for this. Whatever, I don't know who's included and who's not, but that would make sense because Rav Sternbach is a member of the Badatz. So it could be that chumrah. So the chumrah might be available in Yerushalayim, but at least in America. Right, that it's actually ma'abed in that particular way. So you can do it, you know, you can do it. But you also have to then be very careful. But right, there's also a problem with that. Number one is you can't, if you use it for something else, it's puzzle, right? So you actually have to keep, it could be a chumra da'asi li de'kula. And furthermore, sometimes during the ibud process, he mentions this in Inside Stam, during the ibud process, sometimes you stretch it and it goes, right? So sometimes holes could develop. So if you're doing it lishma for a sefer Torah only, so then, and there's a hole in the middle of it, so then you got a problem, right? So then you have to throw it out. But if it's for all purposes, so then if it gets a hole in it, so okay, so then you cut into smaller pieces and you turn it into tefillin, right? So okay, all right, we'll stop here and I'll pick up Mirza Hashem next week.